There is no doubt that you have heard us say in the past that working in virtually any capacity in the Ontario Hockey League is a labor of love. Most people who do it have jobs outside of the job that is working in the Ontario Hockey League, and the worlds have collided here today. Chris Pope, who sells beer for Molson for a living, that's the full-time job, is sitting in a bar drinking the product, as I'm sure they call it, as we record our podcast this week. Tough life. We're Shoeless Joe's in Wingham? What?
Crabby Joe's.
Crabby Joe's, sorry.
Listowel, yeah. Slightly worse than Wingham. but a great establishment here. This podcast brought to you by Crabby Joe's.
The meeting was in Wingham. The meeting was in Wingham, and then you meeting down to Listowel. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so I went up to the old stomping grounds of Wingham, where I used to live and work in radio, actually. I got a new bar opening there, Riverside. Beautiful spot, and then was... Meeting ran a little long. I thought I was going to make it home in time to do this podcast, and got in my car and thought, oh boy, I'm not going to be able to make it home in time. And I really have to pee.
Crabby Joe's to the rescue.
So it was, I need internet for this podcast. What am I going to do? And I thought, well, I'm just going to have to go into, I thought about a Tim's, but a Tim's is a little quiet, you know, but a lot of people in and out. So I thought, well, I'll just go to Krabby's and I'll hope they have like a corner booth or something. I went in the back earlier because I thought I'd just hide in the back, but the lighting was really dark and I thought they won't be able to see me or anything. So I picked a spot here in the bar. I got the wonderful waitress who continues to walk by and look at me while I'm being recorded on a video. And I'm assuming she realizes that I'm not interested in ordering food right now. But of course, I am at Krabby Joe's, so I will indulge in a beautiful Creamore premium lager.
I absolutely love the future and how this all comes together. You stop at Krabby Joe's, not just for the fine washroom facilities, but so you can get on the Wi-Fi and record a podcast. You too can do this in Listowel, kids. There you go.
Right? And honestly, it's not ideal. Obviously, there's background music going. I'm sitting in a bar. But when you're doing seven jobs, sometimes you got to make things work. And we made it work. We had the interview, got done.
So anybody watching this on our YouTube channel for the full video experience will be seeing something they haven't seen on this podcast before, although they might again, because Pope in a bar is not necessarily an uncommon thing. But
I think we're going to start doing a couple of these from some bars around town. I'm going to be honest with you. I've had a couple bars reach out wanting to sponsor the podcast and talked about maybe doing a live recording. So
that will absolutely happen then. We can absolutely, we'll bring a guest in. We'll record the entire thing in the bar. We'll invite some listeners. How many listeners do you think we have? Six, seven?
Depends.
Yeah.
Depends on the day and the guest. But we're just having a beer. It's not like it's on, you know, it's professional. Social.
Of course. Of course.
Social.
On that note, we should really quick, and I'm going to forget his name because you usually monitor our inbox, farwellandpope@gmail.com. But we asked the other week about, hey, where are you listening from? Let us know. Send us an email, farwellandpope@gmail.com, or tweet us at farwell_OHL, @_ChrisPope. And I feel awful for forgetting his name, but he was from Pittsburgh. So he just said, technically, maybe my market would be Erie, because that's the closest thing, but found us in Pittsburgh, really enjoying the OHL Stories podcast. So fantastic.
Joe is his name, Mike. Yep.
Thanks, Joe. Really appreciated that. That's fantastic. And still,
Just real quick, he said he learned of the podcast actually from watching a Rangers Erie Otters game on CHL TV. They offered up one of those free views where anybody can go on and use the new CHL TV and watch games for free. And now he subscribes on Apple Podcasts and YouTube. So it's great to have Joe as a listener. I really appreciate it. Especially for Pittsburgh.
Be like Joe. Yeah. City of Champions, my Pittsburgh Steelers over there. Absolutely. Yeah. Be like Joe, subscribe to the podcast, please. Leave a review and a rating if you like. And by all means, check out OHL Stories on YouTube, because not just this podcast, but lots of other stuff, including coffee reviews and fun stuff on that YouTube channel too.
Vince also reached out from St. Catharines. So thanks to Vince. And Bill from Barrie says he's a longtime Barrie Colts season ticket holder. OHL is the best. Keep up the good work.
This is amazing. And still, I wanted to say this a moment ago. Where are all, like, I thought for sure it would just be the flood of our neighbors and our family members from Waterloo region. Not one so far. Not one.
No, they know us too well to enjoy us.
Good point.
I think is what it is.
So Barrie, St. Catharines, Pittsburgh, all those replies from London a couple
weeks
back.
We had a lot of London, yeah.
When we first put this out. So, and on that note, We have spent considerable time over the last week scouring the league a little more thoroughly for guests. You're gonna love where we're headed with some of the guests coming up, including the guest of this week, who is an all-time top 10 OHL point getter. Can't wait to get to this interview.
It's crazy to think when you say that, like all-time, like of all the players that have been through this league, and he's top 10 in points. It's crazy to think about for me. I just think of all the players.
To put it in perspective, and granted, he spent less time in the league, but John Tavares finished behind this guy in points. So anyway, when I was talking about the sighting that you don't get every day, Pope in a bar on this podcast, that way back then was my segue. You can see how professional this all is. But I was going to segue that into something that we saw in a game that we broadcast last week, Poper, that is not something I have seen before in a game. And of course, I'll never say we'll never see it again or something else equally odd. But this one was strange because we have seen our share of too many men on the ice penalties, but we haven't seen one quite like this. So the Rangers are playing in Sarnia. Last Friday night, we're doing the broadcast, obviously. Great broadcast location there, right on top of the ice. You see everything perfectly. And it's 4-3 for the Sting in the third period. And Sarnia's on a power play. And so I'm calling the action, and all of a sudden, out of the corner of my eye, Poper's like pointing at the ice. And then as the seconds later, Sarnia scores. And the first words out of your mouth, Chris, is there's too many men on the ice. And I hadn't really noticed because I was focusing on where the puck was and who had it. And then you see the players celebrate the goal along the half wall on the far side. And sure enough, it was easy as anything to count all six Sting players. They skated down to do the high five across the bench. And I'm still waiting for somebody to jump off the ice. There were six guys going down the high five train. And none of the officials happened to notice that.
Yeah, it was a weird one to see that many players going down and no ref to notice. But I was adamant, almost, I shouldn't say adamant, I was quite curious how the referees wouldn't review it, because it's a goal. So it's not like you're reviewing just a simple offside. You're reviewing a scoring play, and it's a pretty easy review. Look at the goal, count the skaters, too many men, goal doesn't count. It's certainly not going to take more than 30 seconds. But too many men is a judgment call on the referee because of the line changes and whether they were in the play. But I still feel like you should be able to make a judgment by reviewing the play, especially when there's a goal scored. It's not just like a penalty. I get it if it's a penalty, but if the goal is scored and there's too many men on the ice, especially on a power play, it's not like they were going for a line change. They were set up in the zone, three up top, three down low. It was a weird play, something I haven't seen before, and at least I don't think so. But mistakes happen. Whatever. Yeah,
and that's the thing. I think the strangeness of the timing of it and how it all happened. Like you said, they were set up three high, three low, six players celebrate. You're just not even thinking of, like, when you see a too many men penalty, it happens at the bench at a line change, almost inevitably, except in this particular case. So it is what it is. But it's interesting, too, that you mentioned the review and how this, for whatever reason, is not reviewable, because some of the folks on social media after it happened, and take that for what it's worth, but they were pretty critical. How can you not review something that led to a goal? It's the most important thing in a game when a goal is scored. Fair comment, which brings us to one of the other things that we saw during our broadcast week. It was quite the broadcast week for us. The Rangers playing in London on Family Day Monday here in Ontario, and not one, but two goals called back in the second period, called back that the Kitchener Rangers thought they had scored, called back because of offside. So this is interesting. So I'm talking to the coaches, the Rangers coaching staff, after the game. And they said, what was, did you get a look at the second one? Was it offside? And I'm like, the first one, I couldn't see that well because it happened on the near side boards. Again, great broadcast location, but Navrin Mutter was the player, and he was on the right wing side of the ice. And that's right against the boards that we're looking down from on that side of the ice. So we couldn't really see puck, his skates, everything, because it's too close to the boards. The second one happened on the far side of the ice, much easier for you and me to see, but right in front of the Kitchener Rangers bench. So obviously the coaches can't see it unless they're looking right over the dasherboard or right over the top of the boards. credit to in London, we've got this beautiful view of the instant replay, huge monitors right behind us. And they took away the black curtain so we can see everything they see. So I'm talking to the coaches after the game. They said the first one was definitely offside. We couldn't see the second one. I said the second one was definitely offside. So there you go. Because we could see the white between the blue line and the puck on the second one. Either way, this is all by explanation. Here's the thing I want to talk to you about, though. Why are we going to, and this was brought up by Jim on Twitter, so credit to the guy that describes himself on Twitter as the media critic, but I think he makes an interesting point. Yes, I guess by the book, Navrin Mutter was offside, carrying the puck over the line backwards, maybe not having control. Yes, on the other side of the ice, Justin Nolet, the Rangers defenseman, tried to keep play onside, but it had just come outside the line, and then he shot it back in again. The offside, what happened at the blue line, had absolutely no bearing on the goal that was scored. Navrin Mutter maintains possession, comes in and shoots a puck that goes past Brett Brochu, just like hockey is played. You shoot the puck, the goalie tries to stop it. If he doesn't stop it, it's a goal. Justin Nolet, yes, didn't quite keep the puck onside, but the puck comes into the zone. The Rangers make a couple of plays. They score a goal. The goal was perfectly legal. Why are we going back and replaying zone entries when it has no bearing on the outcome of the play?
Because the rule was broke. That's why.
I understand. But I think, like, it's not like the player was doing the old-fashioned cherry picking that we used to like to talk about. Like, he's standing inside the opposing blue line at the top of the circles and somebody fires him a pass in behind everybody. Like, that's what offside's really all about. The player going offside, yes, I know, was offside. The officials got it right. I'm just saying, why are we bothering reviewing that when it had no bearing on the way the goal was scored? I think Jim makes a good point. What's the point of reviewing offsides and taking back goals?
It's a stupid point.
How so?
That's what it's there for. You can't be offside. It's the rule. And a goal was scored. The coach wanted to look at it because it was a close play. People make mistakes. It's a close play. So when do you draw the line?
Well, this is exactly my point. This is where I'd like the line drawn. Like, I'm not a big fan of instant replay. And listen, I can hear the criticisms already. I'm not complaining that a team got robbed because I'm the broadcaster for the Kitchener Rangers. I'm not saying the Rangers got robbed. I'm saying that I think Jim brought up a really good point in this. I don't know why we implemented this rule in the first place, because human beings play the game and human beings are going to miss close calls, whatever. It didn't directly impact the goal. A lot happened between the close offside and the goal being scored. By all means, review plays where a goalie was interfered with or a player kicked the puck or threw the puck or however else directed the puck into the net. Do stuff like that where they essentially cheated to score. In this case, they scored fair and square. Like, the play could go on for several minutes and then get called back because of an offside by a quarter of an inch. Give me a break.
But yeah, that's not scoring fair and square, though.
It is so.
No, it's not. It's offside. It's offside. At the end of the day, like, what, they're going to get the call right. So it's not, if both those goals that Kitchener scored, they weren't scored fairly. They were offside. That is the rule of the game. You don't get to make up when you like offside and when you don't, and how close it is.
This is different now, though. They scored the goals fairly. They just didn't enter the zone fairly. That's the truth of it.
Yeah. Sure.
So, but why are we so fussy about how they enter the zone? Like, we're talking, honestly, like, by fractions of inches here. Why do we care so much about that?
Well, you're looking at it just because it's offside and you think it doesn't lead to the goal, but it does lead to the goal.
No, it doesn't.
It does. Would have went if you didn't. If Justin Nolet doesn't keep the puck in, then the whistle would go and then you don't have that play. Navrin Mutter, when he entered the zone, the whistle goes if he's offside, and then he doesn't even get his shot on Brett Brochu. So it's not fair. You can't just decide, oh, I don't like offsides. But if the puck goes across the goal line by an eighth of an inch, you want to review that because it's a goal. But if it crosses the blue line at a quarter of an inch, then we can't review it because it takes too much time. It adds an extra 4 minutes to Jim's day sitting in the rink. Get over it.
I understand it's nitpicking.
Sorry, just real quick. I understand it's nitpicking when you're looking at, ooh, it's super close. It's super close. But that's what it's there for. Because the refs can pick up normally, the linesmen can pick up the ones that are 3 feet off, but they even make the mistakes. So if I'm Dale Hunter and I'm standing on my bench right at the blue line and the Rangers enter my zone and I know it's offside, but the ref didn't call it, I should have the right to review that play because I know that I got it right and you didn't.
Yeah. And that's where we're going to disagree on this. I think Jim brings up a really interesting point and an opportunity, frankly, for us as people involved in the game to advocate for change. Stop with this goofiness. It's too much. And the junior game is awesome because of how quick it is anyway. That game went into overtime. It's still played in less than 3 hours. Like I love the pace of the junior game. I just think we are inserting way too much technology. And again, I'm speaking about this in sports in general. Unless it's that electronic eye in tennis, I don't want reviews. Stop it. That one works perfectly. It takes 4 seconds. The review is done. Play continues. Football. Remember when they brought in instant replay? Oh, it's going to take 2 minutes. We'll put the ref under the hood. And they stopped putting the clock on the screen because it always took longer than 2 minutes. It's dumb. Get it out of the game. And this is a great place to take it out.
See, I think it's the perfect place for it. You have to understand that that is there. It's part of the rules. They're going to review it. And the simple review of an offside really isn't that big of a deal when, you know, we talk about broadcasters of the game and trying to influence change. I think there's a lot, there's so many different areas we can influence change that would better this game and the people in it versus whether we're once a game taking a look at an offside on a goal.
Do you remember?
It doesn't happen very, it's not like tennis where it happens. Like I love tennis and I love the Hawkeye thing, but it happens every single rally.
Oh, no, let's see where the ball went. It does not.
They do. No, but they'll show it. They use it as they show it to us on every single play. Like they'll show it going, even if it's not a challenge, the challenge to, we just see it. It takes 4 seconds, but they use that Hawkeye almost on every single play just to see how close it was. Ooh, I love it. But that technology isn't in hockey rinks and isn't
right. So don't waste our time. But don't waste our time with this nonsense. It drives me nuts.
I can't believe that you care this much about reviews for offsides.
Yeah, because
it blows my mind.
It's wasting time. I care this much about instant replay.
Okay, so what do you want them to do? What do you want them to do? No offside reviews.
Yes.
So if there's a 3-foot offside and the linesman doesn't call it and some team loses a championship.
Thank you for making my point. So I was going to bring this up and I'm so bad with the names. I think it was it Joyce, the umpire that blew the perfect game. Remember?
Ron Joyce? Jim Joyce. Right?
Jim Joyce. Whatever. Jim Joyce. It was, and I forget the poor pitcher who got the 28 out perfect because
Jim Joyce.
The player was out. Like, I remember watching that game on TV live, and I'm like, how did the umpire get that call wrong? But he did. You rarely, and I mean rarely, see that glaring an offside missed. And if it happens, guess what? But it is rare, Chris.
It's not rare, Mike. You comment on every time they miss an offside during the game. And how many times do you comment on?
Right. But I said one that is that glaring, right? As glaring as the one that cost that poor kid his perfect game in baseball. Like, from my perspective, yeah. Oh, that play looked offside. Well, I guess they didn't see it as an offside. Play continues. Life is good. I'm just asking. All I'm asking for here is less technological interference in the sports. Until the games are being played by robots, get the cameras out of the way, except for the really important stuff. And whether or not a puck was 2 inches offside or a player didn't have perfect control as he skated into the zone backwards, that's wasting our time.
It really isn't. It's getting the play right.
Okay.
And they're making mistakes. It takes a long review is probably what? 4 minutes? 3 minutes? Maybe five? Do we get up to five on some of them, maybe? But especially the two in London, they didn't take that long. It was a play on a goal. It's not like they're doing it just to look at an offside because I want the faceoff to come outside my defensive zone.
I'll give you that.
That might be going a little over the top. I'd like a neutral zone faceoff, please. That was offside. No, we don't get that. It's only on goals. I don't mind it.
All right. One other big thing in the Ontario Hockey League this week is, of course, the outdoor game to be played between the Oshawa Generals and the Hamilton Bulldogs. Sorry, between the Oshawa Generals and the soon-to-be OHL champion, Hamilton Bulldogs. You're welcome. Listen, I think you've picked two great franchises to be a part of this because there's a great venue in Hamilton, and the Bulldogs are going to be OHL champs this year. And then Oshawa, one of the most historic teams in the Ontario Hockey League. I got a lot of love for the Jennies. But I'm going to be honest with you. I am so over, and here comes the old man yells at cloud, but I'm over the outdoor game.
We just had that.
I know. And so I'm keeping to type right here. I'm going to do it again because I'm over the outdoor game thing. Somebody suggested, again, I'm going to give credit to the social media experts in this case, that instead of outdoor games, leagues should look at playing games in historic arenas like Galt Arena Gardens in Cambridge, which is celebrating 100 years and collecting memories this year of your games or your times in that arena. That would be an awesome site to play a major junior hockey game, or maybe even an NHL exhibition game just for poops and giggles. I'm just kind of over the outdoor game thing. That's all.
I wouldn't mind seeing them play in, you know, like the Galt Gardens, but I think it's pretty safe to say that's never going to happen. The Galt Gardens hosts 2,000 people. Ivor Wynne hosts 27,000.
Yeah.
Roughly. I think even more, 29,000.
Are you still calling it Ivor Wynne? Really?
I do, yeah.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
Tim Hortons Field, but
I get you.
You live in Hamilton, it's Ivor Wynne. You know what I mean? It's not like, it's like Maple Leaf Gardens. What do they call it now for U of T or whatever? I don't know. It's Maple Leaf Gardens.
It's the Mattamy Center.
Is that what it is?
And the grocery store, whatever. I can't remember the grocer that's there.
That's anyway. The gardens. Yeah. It's like if they threw a name on the odd. How many people are going to call it City News Center?
That'll never happen because our corporate masters won't put that kind of money up. But anyway, yeah.
Touche. I honestly love the outdoor game. I get completely at the National Hockey League level. Like, I'm not watching too many outdoor games. I'll peek in for 5 minutes to take a look at it, see the kind of hockey it is, and move on. I know a lot of diehard NHL fans will probably watch the entire game. As an OHL fan, I think it's awesome. When was the last OHL outdoor game we had? Has it ever happened?
Oh, yeah. There were a couple. They did them for a couple of years. Plymouth, SAG. I'm trying to remember what the last one was. Sarnia, Windsor. I'm trying to remember the matchups. I should have looked this up before I brought up the subject. But, yes, the OHL has done it before. It's been a few years.
Yeah, I love it. I think every player is going to love it. Imagine, like, think of a guy like we talked about him on this podcast towards the end here, but you get a guy like Arbor Jack guy who goes home to Hamilton to play for his team and is now going to be able to say he played at Ivor Wynne Stadium. Like, that is awesome, especially for a kid that grew up in that city to be able to play an outdoor game at Ivor Wynne or Tim Hortons Field, whatever. I think what a time that's going to be for a guy like Arbor. And I think all those players will remember it. They'll be on this podcast in 10 years telling us stories about that game and how cold they were and so on and so forth. I think it's a great idea to put some eyes on the OHL when you probably don't have that opportunity too often to do, but with the outdoor game already being played in Hamilton and the OHL piggybacks the National League, I love it. Are you going to watch? Are you going to go? I want to go.
Yeah, I'll do what you do with the NHL games, which is what I do with them now. Check in, see what things look like, and then move on. I just think as a gimmick, it was cute for a while, but I just would like to see something different now. But maybe people say the same thing about this podcast. Hey, nice gimmick, guys. Time for something different. I don't know.
That's fair. How many people do you think? 29,000 it holds. Do you think you can sell that out?
For Hamilton Bulldogs, Oshawa Generals, I love them. I love this league. No, I don't think you can. But listen, you've
I even
got
just thought like all 20. Whoops, or pardon me. I think let's say 20 players minus the imports. Let's even say 15 players from each team. All their friends and family will want to go to that game. You never know.
Oh yeah,
and it'd be awesome.
You'll draw some just for the novelty of an outdoor hockey game for sure. But I think you're going to be hard pressed to put 29,000 people. Either way, I wish them success.
It's a lot of people.
I will also wish that moving forward, we come up with and I'll just give credit again to the Twitterverse. I don't think it's a terrible idea to say, hey, let's play these gimmick, if you will, games in historical arenas. And I say that as a huge fan of the arena where we get to do most of our work, because it's very unique in the OHL. Everything else is becoming, well, we talked about the two rinks we were in this past week, Sarnia and London. London is certainly a step up and newer than Sarnia, but Sarnia and London are these cookie cutter type, you know, put two bowls in there and give everybody their creature comforts kind of arena that's coming up. Meridian Center in St. Catharines is the same. Windsor, I mean, just go on and on. Beautiful, love them. But some of those classic barns, oh boy. You're in Listowel as we speak. Sure. How about the old Listy Arena? Wouldn't that have been fun?
They tore it down.
I know, that's what I'm like back in the, come on. If we don't get one in the Allman Arena before it's too late, let's go.
But have you ever been to the new Listowel Arena?
Yes.
It's hilarious. It's like they just built their old one. It's so funny. Zamboni comes out from the same spot, warm room, same spot, everything. It's hilarious.
Sure. Of course. Speaking of hilarious, you're going
to just real quick. If you want to go and if you want to see a hockey game at the Allman Arena or you want to see a game at Galt Gardens, go watch a game. It doesn't need to be the OHL. You can go watch the Cambridge Redhawks or the Stratford Culletons Warriors. The Culletons, the greatest junior B franchise of all time.
Listen, I wasn't behind the name change. Let's not go down that
I know. I'm just, as you can tell, what's with me and old names? Ivor Wynn, Culletons. Anyway, that's all.
Okay. Oh, you know what the old name of the Budweiser Gardens is? The John Labatt Center. How do you like that old name, pal?
I don't like it. I like it at all.
I was about to say a moment ago, speaking of hilarious, just remember this line that you will get delivered by our guest this week. Give me a Joe Louis and a hot dog, and I'll play for you. That's the kind of content we're getting from our guest on OHL Stories this week.
Yes, he's a top 10 all-time OHL scorer. Former Kitchener Ranger, former North Bay Battalion. Trevor. Oh, sorry, North Bay Centennial.
My apologies. Thank you. Old names. Yeah. Let's go.
Right? My throwback. And I dropped the ball on that one. Oh, such trash. Do you want me to start it over? Can we edit this?
I think, no, we're not going to edit anything.
No, I know. It's all live. Trevor Gallant, also known as T-Bone. So, Trevor, I want to start out here. I was listening to an interview the other day with Gerard Gallant, and the opening question I'm going to repeat to you, because there's often, with Gerard, obviously famous across hockey circles, but the question is, Gallant, you've probably heard it a lot. Which one is it? Gallant?
Well, you know what's funny? I actually didn't hear that question for Gerard, but I'm guessing he may have answered it the same way I'm going to. It depends on where you are. You know, like if you're out east, where my parents are actually originally from, where Gerard's from, PEI, I would believe it's Gallant. And then down here in Ontario, they say Gallant. I've also heard Gallant a couple of times over the years. So there is actually three ways to say it. So I would say where I am now in London here in Ontario, I would say more often it's Gallant. But go out east, which I have done in the past quite a bit, Gallant is the way you do it out there.
So I think it's safe to say it's Gallant then.
Yeah, I would say.
If they're doing it that way out there, I mean, that's what we should be doing.
Absolutely.
The interesting thing about that, when it comes to the pronunciation, it would have been made more than 400 times in your junior hockey career at various arenas. And I'm sure you got a bunch of different pronunciations of it. But to this day, and what stood out to me about the stats, 7th overall in OHL scoring history, but nobody has had as many points since you left the game. I think it speaks to the eras, but interesting. How does it feel to still hold that status, though, 30 years later?
To be honest, you know, it's a bit odd. Like, I don't think about it too often. Like, I have friends of mine, and like, you know, they poke at me the odd time, and, you know, they tell their kids and stuff. So, you know, I have to stay relevant in the game. So they got to tell their kids about, a little bit of something about myself to get them to come to my programs. But, you know, I'm a little outdated to them, right? But, you know, to be honest, I mean, it's pretty cool. I guess I'm pretty proud of it. You know, I am surprised, to be honest, that things haven't changed much up there. I guess the eras have completely changed. I mean, I think in a real fast, at a fast pace, you know, I think there's probably 90s, early 2000s, and then boom, I feel like the game itself exploded with talent, speed, strength, which, you know, the game totally changed. So, you know, would I have been able to do what I did now? I don't really know. I can't answer that question. But I think it was probably a little bit harder to come by, maybe the points or the goals or the assists the last 10, 15 years. And I think too, a lot of the players that, you know, I did, you know, I think you guys would know this by looking at the stats, like I did get 5 seasons in, you know, did I miss some games? Sure. But, you know, the kids today now that are the real elite players, they're not right. The NHL and they've opened the door to younger players. It's a younger league now. So, you know, I didn't get to go and play on to the National Hockey League. Of course, it's still a, you know, a thorn in my side about that. But, you know, I think that's probably a little bit why as well, the youth in the NHL.
As a London kid, what was it like playing for the Kitchener Rangers?
You know, it's funny. Yeah, it was great. I mean, I actually would never trade that, the experience of moving away. I was very lucky enough to be close to home that if I wanted to come home, I could. You know, when I was a younger boy, of course, I used to watch the nights at the old London Gardens, and, you know, it was a big deal. But to be honest, I think back in the day, it's such a whirlwind of like things happening so fast. You don't even get time to sit down and really look at the big picture, you know? So, I used to love coming back to play in London, which was a great treat for me. And, you know, obviously having friends and family to come watch you play and stuff like that. So, obviously, you know, always wanted to win that game. We have great success over the years against them, but yeah, I mean, you know, I used to love coming back home to play for sure.
You mentioned a moment ago, not having had that chance to play in the National Hockey League. And I'm sure Trevor Gallant today looks at that differently than Trevor Gallant in the early 1990s, when you're tearing up the Ontario Hockey League and you can't get a look from a pro team. What was that like for you as a teenager when you're saying, come on, NHL, I'm right here?
That's a tough one. You know, it's actually pretty emotional for me, you know. It was a tough time, because I guess when you're that young, you really don't understand it, right? I look back now and I could look at it differently, like you just mentioned. You know, I think I thought I was doing everything I could do. In reality, I probably wasn't. You know, could I have worked harder in the gym, being a smaller player, you know, 1000%, you know. I think today, if I would have had a little more support, I think today you'd have a little more of the staff, and the way they set things up, it's so professional that they keep you on that line. And I would have benefited from that, you know, having someone kind of guide me down a path and say, I'm going to put some time into Trevor and, you know, keep him in the gym, or keep him, you know, get him 10% faster. Cause really, I think the only thing that really held me back was probably my overall breakaway speed, being able to break away from opponents. So I think that was probably it. I don't think my height really hurt me or my strength. I think it was probably just my breakaway speed that really, and maybe that I didn't score enough goals. Like I passed the puck a lot as more of a playmaker. And when you were small back then, I think they wanted you to score, you know, 30 or 40 or 50 goals in the NHL. Like some guys were able to do. And that really wasn't my forte until I got a bit older. I was able to score more, but looking back, I could have done things better. I could have worked harder for sure. I do have regrets about that, but at the same time, you're young, and you know, when you're always kind of the guy, you're like, I wouldn't say it came easy to me. I would never say that. I worked hard in the games. I think I really worked hard in hockey. It was more practice and outside the rink and those types of things that maybe I wasn't so great at. But at the time, you're 17, 18, 19, you've always were able to play at the highest level without doing those things. And all of a sudden, one day, it was just ripped away from you, right? So it was definitely tough. When I went to my fourth year back in Kitchener, I went to training camp. And I'll keep names out of it because I respect all the guys that were able to get an opportunity. You know, guys were packing up their bags to go to NHL camps. And I just came off a 120-point season. And I had nothing. You know, and I'm playing exhibition games. It hurt me. Like, it was tough. It was really tough. So it was, you know, it wasn't a good year and a half for me at that point, put it that way.
How much did that play into your mindset as a kid? Like, you must have been struggling mentally at that time watching that happen.
Yeah, it was tough. I mean, I'm an open book. Like, you know, like I have no problem talking about it. Like, I'm old now, and if anyone can learn from it, you know, I'd absolutely would love that to happen. Yeah, it was frustrating. I was angry. You know, I took it out on probably the rookies. You know, I probably took it out on my parents. You know, I remember leaving the rink with my skates. After I think Joe had put up the, and nothing against Joe, I mean, I'm just saying the story, you know, it was a dark time, because I remember them putting up the roster for an exhibition game, and here I am in my fourth year, and I'm thinking, okay, I'm not going to play exhibition games. Like, why would I, right? Like, just the way it's supposed to happen, right? Or whatever. And I'm in this lineup, I'm like, guys going to NHL camps, you know, I'm in this lineup. It's a little bit embarrassing. I remember grabbing my skates and leaving the room and throwing them against the wall. Like, I was that upset, you know, and it was tough. I held a lot of anger for a lot of years, probably 4 or 5 years, to be honest.
So how much of that experience, Trevor, do you work to instill in the kids you work with today through your school, the kids that you're scouting and maybe talk to?
Yeah, I think nowadays it's been proven over and over. I think years ago there was more of a template. I think it was like, here's your cookie cutter. This is the player has, you know, this is what has to happen. You know, that's changed, I think, a bit. You know, the opportunity there for anything, I think, is open. Whether you're small, tall, big, doesn't really matter. I think that the game has opened their minds to kids that might develop later, different assets they might provide. So my thing is, you know, trying to make the complete hockey player, whether I'm scouting, coaching kids. I coach in the minor midget level with the Elgin Middlesex Chiefs. I have my tag hockey company in London here. And my thing is, like, how do I make the complete hockey player? That if he's trying to make a junior B, junior A, minor pro, European pro team, like, doesn't matter. Like, if they go there and, you know, that's not working for them, they can adapt and become this to support the team, right? So let's say it's, you know, a third line, fourth line guy, left winger, but he plays right wing. But have I taught him enough that he can go in that position and feel comfortable? So I try and teach the game as a whole and then break the game down. So, you know, and give the kids hope that, you know, I have lots of stories. I'm 47. You guys have heard lots of stories about guys that were never drafted. There's been tons of them, even in my era, right? Lots of guys that weren't drafted and went on to have great careers. So, you know, enjoy the game for what it is and don't take it for granted is kind of my message. And then, you know, work extremely hard.
When you were younger and growing up, how did you fall in love with the game?
That's a good question. You probably get this a lot from guys that play. I mean, I don't really remember. I just remember going to the rink one day. Vaguely remember this, going into the room and the coach was there and I was probably 4 or 5. And I remember, I don't think I was late, but wasn't early. And I remember a lot of the jerseys were kind of taken. And I remember I looked at the wall and there was number 8, number 11. And I just liked the way number 11 looked. And then that was it. I wore number 11 pretty much my whole career after that. But that's when, you know, I think that's when it started, my first time on the ice, where it was somewhat competitive, not like learn to skate, or it was actually like got a puck and you tried it. And then I was just good right away. And I think from there, it just took off.
Just on the heels of that, when did you know, you said you were good, but when did you know I'm better than people I'm playing with? I have a real future in this game.
You know what's funny? That's a tough, you know why that's tough to answer is because I'll be honest, up until when I was drafted in the OHL, I never thought, it's weird, I never thought that much about it, you know, to be honest. Now, when I was, you know, minor Adam and major Adam and things like that, yeah, like, you know, I was getting 100 and 200 goals a year or whatever. Like, you know, it was just so much more advanced than everyone else. So I knew I was really good. And you'd walk into an arena at a tournament and people, even back then, like, you were like a little celebrity, right? And the other guys my age, like, you know, there was kind of a core of us in Ontario, like Chris Gratton, Todd Harvey, you know, we all kind of knew each other because we were kind of the cream of the crop. So you're like a little celebrity, right? People would stare at you and go, that's that kid. Or so it was kind of weird, you know? I knew I was, I didn't know I was going to go anywhere or have a career. I didn't really think about it. I did know quite early that I was better than most kids, to answer your question.
Along those lines, because, and I love the honesty about looking back to who you were at the time and how angry you were with things not maybe working out the way you had dreamed they would in the game. But you had yourself, and so much to talk about in Europe after this, but you had a hell of a junior career. You're tearing it up and proving that you're more than capable in the Ontario Hockey League. Can you think back on a highlight? I mean, when you look back on your days in junior, what stands out the most?
Jeez, that's a very good question. I wasn't fortunate enough to win a championship. That would be number one. I believe that's why we played the game. You know, I guess probably if I could pick maybe a couple would be, you know, maybe my first year playing my first OHL game was very special. And then my first year, I had a pretty good season. And in one of the games I had, I think 5 or 6 points, like a goal and 5 assists or 4 assists or something. And that was pretty cool being a younger guy. And then probably just within the Ontario Hockey League, I have other, like, you know, things that I'm pretty proud of. But, when I got my 400th point, I was in North Bay and they, you know, stopped the game and they announced it and stopped. And that was pretty cool, I guess. So, I mean, if you break it down that way, I mean, it's probably those two things. I mean, being drafted by Kitchener and, Nothing bad to say about Kitchener. I mean, I had a wonderful time there. You know, a lot of experience and it was great. But if I broke it down, probably a couple of those things would be.
What was it like as a London kid? You watch games at that ice house growing up, but then you get drafted by Kitchener and you walk in to the odd as a Ranger. What was that feeling like?
Oh my God. It was pretty amazing, man. Like, God, I wish you could put it in a bottle, right? Like, honestly, like the feeling you have, like, you felt like you almost felt like you made it somewhere, you know, like, you know, and then, I don't know, it was like, it's almost like your mini NHL, I guess, right? Like, it's not NHL, but at that age, it's kind of like that feeling to you. I guess if I could make it simple. It was a wonderful feeling. Like, when I was drafted at the odd, right? Like, they held the draft, right? So, you know, they selected me, and I remember, it's been in the paper. It wasn't the paper back in the day, but the fans were very happy with Joe McDaniel when they drafted me. You know, they were, I think they were chirping about, you know, whatever, being a tiny person or whatever. But that was my first take on the odd, right? Like, I mean, I might've been there when I was younger as a kid, but you know, it was great. Like, you know, first time stepping on the ice for training camp, and you know, I loved it. It was great. It was a great arena. I loved it. It was awesome.
So from that cathedral that it's still known as on the junior hockey circuit today, what was your least favorite building to go into, and why was it Windsor?
That's hilarious. I'm trying to think about that now. It's been so long, you know, to be honest, Mike, like I'm trying to think. Definitely Windsor was not much fun to go into. Just greasy and small and fans on top of you. And like an odor, you know, like you were in like a bar at like 4 a.m. You know, that was pretty dingy there. So I would probably say that's right up there. And caught me off guard there. I'm trying to think of somewhere else I didn't really like to go play.
North Bay.
North Bay. I actually liked North Bay a lot, actually. Ice was great up there. Loved the ice. Beautiful ice. But yeah, Windsor wasn't much fun. I used to like going to Windsor for one reason. We used to go to Charlie's for pregame meal. And they had good chicken wings. And going back to where I could have worked harder, chicken wings, you know, whatever I was having for pregame meals, right?
How was that in the belly skating around?
well, 17, 18 didn't bother me, you know. But the Joe Louis before the games were not Joe didn't like that very much. He caught me one time eating the Joe Louis. We're going to Owen Sound. And anyway, good story. He came to the back of the bus to go to the washroom, and all the vets were back there. And I think I was opening a Joe Louis for free, like just as a snack. And he's like, Jesus Christ, what the hell are you doing? Anyway. So
how was Joe as a coach?
Joe was great. I think Joe was, I really liked Joe a lot. I mean, he was, like he's had such a great career in the game. I think it just kind of shows you what kind of hockey mind he really is. You know, do I think my first year, couple years, was it better? Yeah, I do. I believe that. Honestly, I think at some point, I think, was it time for Joe to move on? Yeah, I think it was. Like, we all have to kind of, you know, was it time for me to move on mentally? Yeah, it was when I left, you know. You know, were the first couple years better with Joe? Yeah, I think they were. I think it got harder for him, and, you know, being around and being there a long time. And it is tough as a coach, you know? So, but yeah, nothing bad to say, all positive with Joe. He treated me very fair, even after I made some mistakes and, you know, bent the rules a little bit. You know, he welcomed me back with open arms and things like that. So, you know, I knew he always kind of liked me as a player, cause I think he knew I'd be there a long time and score lots of points.
Are you going to tell us which rules you broke? Sorry, Mike.
No, can't get into that one. That's okay. That's in the vault.
Okay. How difficult is it, Trevor, as a player on a team when the coach changes? So Jeff Ward comes in, right? All of a sudden there's a different voice and the guy that you were used to is no longer there. What's that like as a player?
That's a good question. I've had it a few times in my career. I don't mind it. I think it's good. I think it's weird. It's like an automatic excitement that comes in. Doesn't matter who it is. It's just, it's a change. And it's almost, you're kind of like, the anticipation about what may happen is there. And I think it makes it good. I think it brings life into the room. Nothing against the coaches that are being relieved, but it's just the way it is. The game, it gets stale, right? And I think that's the hardest part about being a coach. I would say the hardest part is to keep things fresh and new and, you know, the emotions where they need to be. It's very difficult. So new coaches coming in, I think they've got a way to do that. So When Jeff came in, he was great. I mean, I actually played Berwardi down in East Coast League a bit too, after he had left. He's mapped out a great career too, just kind of plugging along there, doing the coaching stuff. So, but yeah, he was good coming in. Again, I wasn't there much that long with him, because then I was traded. But it was definitely fine. He was good.
You talk about that trade, and I was joking about arenas you didn't like. I said North Bay because you went up there, obviously.
Right.
But there's a great story about that trade with just everything happened before heading up to Owen Sound and then getting up to Owen Sound and playing in that game. What was that whole process like for you?
Yeah, you guys probably know the story. Like, you know, I think Kitchener had, you know, decided to kind of do a bit of a rebuild and, you know, kind of move on some of their older guys. And so before we left for the trip, you know, three or four guys got called down to the office, and then it was just pandemonium, right? Like, you know, the kids talk and what's going on. And, you know, Big Dick Chambers was, you know, pulling name bars on and off. I'm like, what the heck, you know? And I had assumed I would be traded, but I never got the call. And then, of course, you hear the rumors that, yes, I was going to be traded. I had to go on the bus and go down to Owen Sound, you know, kind of knowing this is my last game. So I played really well. I remember playing really well and being happy if I played. I might have had a few points. And I remember thinking, you know what, you know, I left the Kitchener playing a really good game, and I didn't want to leave it like giving up. You know, that's not my style. So I went down to Kitchener too. And then when we got back, like whatever, 2 a.m. or whatever time it was in the morning, that's when I was called down to the office and was told that I was traded to, you know, and then I got a garbage bag out and started packing myself up.
So much I want to unpack there. Cause I want to talk about the next adventure too, but let's just stay on that for a minute. Cause Chris and I, from the media side, and so many fans get invested in January the 9th, right? Because the day before the trade deadline, the rumors fly. And you just mentioned you figured you were going to be traded. What's that like? And how much attention were you paying to the trade deadline at that time as a junior player?
A lot.
Yeah.
A lot. I mean, it was, you know, it's where you're going to move to, right? It's not just going, you know, to play one game and coming home. You're moving to a city, like could have been one of, you know, whatever, you know, 16 teams or whatever it was back then. So yeah, it was on my mind. I wasn't sure it was going to happen. You know, I had requested a trade. You know, it was time for me to move on. I was stale. You know, with what I talked about prior, you know, negativity and a lot of anger. It just wasn't going the way I wanted to. I'm not blaming anybody, part of my fault, but I need to move on. So, you know, we did kind of request a trade prior to that. Could have even been, I don't remember the dates, but could have been even months before that. You know, I don't know exactly. So yeah, I was thinking about it quite a bit. But again, you're a kid. It's weird. Like, I don't know. You just kind of deal with it. It's weird.
But I think equally weird then, if I can just follow this up, you meet your new team, if I'm not mistaken, the North Bay Centennials, on a bus somewhere around Peterborough at a highway rest stop. And so the first time you meet your new teammates, you're walking onto the bus as the new kid.
Yeah, absolutely. 100% true. My parents drove me down. We played in Kitchener that night. Like, now, after we played in Owen Sound, I don't know how many days it was. It was probably maybe 2 days later. I know my parents came down from London and picked me up, and we drove to Peterborough. We played them that night. And so, yeah, so I had my stuff, my gear. I had probably a couple suitcases. And, yeah, it was either at a rest stop or a parking lot somewhere. And, yeah, just, you know, the coach came off. Shane Parker was the coach then. Came off, shook his hand, and went on the bus. So, yeah, like, you get on the bus, right? Like, you know, talk about, you know, the Forrest Gump scene pretty much, right? He gets on the bus. You know, where do I sit, right? So
with that many points in your back pocket, did you just walk to the back of the bus and say, my seat?
Hey, get out of here. Yeah, that's funny. No, but they were great. Like, I mean, I think I probably knew a couple of the guys anyway, but no. Was I nervous doing that? Sure I was. You know, it was weird. And then putting on that jersey that night to play a game was even more, you know, more kind of difficult for sure. It was odd. It was definitely, took me some time.
Did you ever second guess yourself? You said you were a setup guy. Did you ever like look around like, where's the Ranger jersey out here? Where am I supposed to put this puck?
No, I don't think that happened. No, I don't think that happened, but I could see how that could happen for sure. But we were, that night was good because the colors were close to Kitchener. So it was a good experience for sure. And then, you know, going there and North Bay, now you're in a smaller town up north. So, you know, let's face it, you know, the different cities, different areas of Ontario, you're gonna have different mentalities and different ways of life. And, you know, so yeah, it was different up there for sure, but I fit in good. I liked it.
You said that it was time for you to leave and have a different scenery around you and stuff. But then you go to North Bay, and then in that final year, you guys only had 14 wins. How frustrating was it to put up 100 plus points, but your team still only has 14 wins?
Yeah, it was really frustrating. I think when I went up there the year prior, at the deadline, like, they had a really good team. I mean, I don't know, they were probably ranked in the top five or six in the CHL at that time. And they just came off a championship season the year prior. So, you know, that was our run, right? Knowing that, you know, the older guys were all gone. And, you know, I didn't really put all this together at the time, to be honest. You know, I didn't really know. So, you know, I think the fact they went through the war and the bruises the year prior when I went traded there, you know, the same fire in the belly, whatever you want to call it, wasn't quite the same. So we didn't have a great playoffs. We're out. So then, of course, the next year, that was my overage year. I mean, would I rather gone and play pro? Yeah, 100%. You know, I didn't want to go to the East Coast League. I thought, why would I do that now? Just go maybe have a good year, maybe light it up and maybe get an American League contract. Or if really lucky enough, if I did really improve in the things I needed to improve in, you know, maybe an NHL two-way contract or something. So that's why I went back. But yeah, it was we had a really young team. Really young team. It's really no one's fault. We tried hard, but we had a really young team. You know, we had guys that were late picks, you know, playing as rookies. And, you know, but then had 105 points. You know, I think that was that's actually pretty, you know, pretty impressive, to be honest. I think the guy they gave the OHL Player of the Year to was maybe Danny Brand at the time. He might have had a few points more than me, but played on a really good team. So what can you do, right?
It occurs to me that London to Kitchener to North Bay as a young man is certainly one thing, but just listening to you talk about maybe getting an AHL contract, a two-way NHL contract, doesn't happen. So all of a sudden it's London to Kitchener to North Bay to a whole damn new continent, and off you go to play hockey in Europe. What was that transition like for you?
It was really weird. I went, so after my overage year in North Bay, obviously we didn't make the playoffs. I was called by some East Coast League teams. Now, just loaning type thing, right? Like, I wasn't able to commit to a whole bunch or sign like a, you know, 2-year thing or anything. I just thought, well, I might as well keep playing hockey, right? And they're going to pay me some money. I thought, wow, this will be cool. So, yeah, I got a call from Rick Vive, who was coaching down in South Carolina for the Stingrays. And I thought, hockey down south this time of year, North Bay, South Carolina. You know, Charleston, pretty easy decision, man. Like, it was pretty simple. So, yeah, so I went down and played for Rick Vive for about, I was there maybe 2 months. It was a great experience. That was awesome. And then I was kind of stuck not knowing what to do. I thought about going to school. I thought about maybe going out east to school, use some of my school package. But, you know, I wasn't really a student, you know, so I thought, you know, maybe that's not the right choice. So, yeah, I just had an agent that got me an opportunity in Finland. And I thought, you know, it was, I think $35,000 US, the contract. And I thought, Jesus. And I started doing the equations back in Canada. I said, this is good money to play hockey. It's the same as what you make in the American League, if not more, because they, you know, they pay for your house and give you a car with your name on it and number on it and all this. So I did that. Now, did I love Finland? No, I didn't love it. It was okay. There's some language barrier, and, you know, it's cold and dark in the winters. And, you know, was I homesick at times? Yeah, my wife, my girlfriend at the time, my wife now, did come over with me, and we had our first baby there. So my son Tristan was born in Finland just after I turned 22. So that's how it all began for the pro hockey thing. And then it became more about where can I make the most money to, you know, feed my family, basically, you know. So it was good. I mean, I always thought I'd be going to Europe, to be honest, guys, because, you know, it was almost like someone was always in the back of my mind saying, or someone was kind of, you know, whispering to me, you know, you should go to Europe. You should go to Europe. You know, like, that's where, you know, you would excel because the ice is bigger and, you know, you're a smaller stature guy. And, you know, at this point in the career or this point of the era of the NHL, they're not, you know, looking at guys that are 5'6" or whatever. And so that's kind of how I ended up going there. And then it was just kind of, you know, Team Canada, then bouncing around a bit over there and stuff.
South Carolina won the championship the next year, I think, didn't they?
I think they might have.
Yeah, I think
they wanted me to come back. Like, Rick was really happy with me, and they really wanted me to come back. I don't know why I didn't go back. I don't really remember why. I thought, like I said, everyone's telling me to go to Europe, and I thought that's a lot more money than I would have made in the East Coast League. You know, so was it money driven? Maybe. I don't know.
What was it like playing in Charleston, though, in that Ice Palace?
It was unreal, man. Like,
yeah.
I couldn't sweet part. Yeah, it was so cool. Like, my first night there, I got picked up by one of the vets. He took me to where he was living. It was right on the ocean. I was like, so I'm waking up in the morning to the sound of the ocean. I'm like, you know, it's like a dream, really, to be honest. Then we drive to the rink, and we're like, it's a beautiful day, flip-flops on, you know, palm trees. You're like, really? This is what it can be. And like, and the rink was just a beautiful arena, like perfect arena for a ECHL team, like unreal. And good facility, great dressing room, treated us unreal. Like, it was a great experience.
Was Europe what you expected it to be? Like, we hear all the time, and you referenced it, you know, the bigger ice surface maybe suited to your style of play. Is it what you expected to be in terms of the caliber of the game?
I would say, if I go back to when I first went over there, was 97, that I was actually expecting it to be, I was surprised how good it was. So the opposite, I wasn't really sure, to be honest, but when I went to play in the top league in Finland, like, I was like a rookie. Like, you know, if I would have went there when I was 25, 27, I probably would have done very well. But imagine a guy going into the National Hockey League at 20 or 21. Like, it takes time, right? And it takes time to get those opportunities. So I just thought I'd go there and just play and be able to do what I do. But I couldn't, you know, like, I could have eventually. So I was the top of the SM League in Finland was super amazing. Like, blown away by how good it was, to be honest. That was my first experience. So, you know, it was my eyes were open.
Did you know you were going to play for Team Canada in the Spengler, or how'd that come up?
So I was actually, so after the year in Finland, you know, they still have the national team program at this point, like the old team that would play in the Olympics basically. Right. And, do all the big tournaments, Deutschland Cup, Izvestia tournament, Spengler Cup and all these things. So they still have that program going. I think that it just disbanded in like early 2000s. But they used to have this team. So I knew Mike Johnson and Andy Murray quite well, because I had played for Mike Johnson for Team Canada U18. So that was kind of a bit of a connection there. And so I had called Mike. I didn't really know what to do. I was kind of lost for what I was going to do. And he's like, why don't you come to our main camp in Calgary to try out for this Team Canada, like the national team program? And that would open doors, because, you know, now you're traveling all these countries, and people are there watching you. So, and plus on your resume, I think people in Europe would like to have a Canadian national team player on there. So it just seemed like a good idea. So I got invited to the camp in Calgary, and I made the team. There was like 80, 90 kids there. And I made the team, but I didn't make the team right away. There was some ex-NHL guys, some American League players that were kind of going that route. We left on the first tour across Canada to play like Team Czech or something. And we all left there. Calgary, and I had like a hat trick my first game, and Mike's like, we got to sign you. Like, so anyway, so I made the team. I wasn't given a spot. I'm pretty proud of that, because I actually made that team, and it wasn't an easy team to make, but, you know, it was a wonderful experience. So the Spengler Cup, what happened back then, it's different now, was the Team Canada national team program would send their guys, but that doesn't mean everyone would get to play in the tournament, right? They would pick up guys, real like big wheels, that maybe just retired at the NHL, playing in Switzerland or playing in Germany. And they'd bring 7, 8, 9, 10 of these guys in, right, to join the roster and sit some guys out that are on the national team. So that kind of gives you a little background there. So I was actually able to play. I was not one of the ones that had to sit out. So basically I was on the Team Canada already, went to Switzerland into Davos, and like our first two lines, which I was on one of them, got to play in the whole tournament. And that's when I met Brian Bellows. Brian Bellows was there on our team. Great guy. Like, I was like, wow, this guy's unreal. But I could tell why he played in the NHL. Like, so strong, like just a beast, right? Big hands, just strong. Anyway, so it was good to meet him, and we had a great time. I mean, I learned a lot from those guys. I was still young then. But yeah, I got to win a Spengler Cup. We won it that year, and it was pretty special.
I got to ask, because you just brought up that name. And when people talk about Kitchener Rangers alumni that made an impact, Brian Bellows and Trevor Gallant, your names come up consistently. And of course, you were different eras of the team, but running into him as a former Kitchener Ranger overseas must have been something.
Oh, it was unreal. Like, you know, I think he actually went back and played a little more in the NHL after that. He was playing in Switzerland or something. I'm not really sure. I can't remember, but he was a wonderful guy. Like, you know, just, you know, like you meet these guys, even though we had a bit of a similar career in the OHL, his stature obviously is much more than me outside the OHL. And, you know, the respect he showed for me, like we just sat there one time at the bar, like after we'd won it, and like we just talked. And I was like, he was talking to me like I was one of his teammates, like, you know. And I've met a lot of guys that don't do that. You know, I've met a lot of guys that have played at high levels of hockey that, you know, it's just the way they're born, their personalities. But BB was a wonderful guy.
Wasn't Jason Spezza on that team?
So Spezza played the year after I played. So I played 97, 98. He played 98, 99. I was actually playing in Italy the next year of my team Canada, and that's when Spezza was playing. I came home from Italy, and they were actually doing a tour around Ontario. So Mike had asked me to come play a couple games with them. And so I played with Spezza throughout that time. We played like two or three exhibition games. But Jason played that year as a 15-year-old. I think he was 15 or maybe was he 15? Geez, I can't even remember. Maybe he was a little, maybe he was 16. Anyway, he was pretty phenomenal.
While we're talking about all these different players, you did mention a bit back about Todd Harvey, Chris Gratton, and you kind of coming up together into Major Junior. Did you keep an eye on them and what they were doing, how they were performing compared to what the numbers you were putting up?
Throughout the OHL, you mean
Yeah,
career?
yeah.
Oh yeah, of course, yeah, for sure. I mean, I didn't make it a massive deal. I think those guys are elite hockey players, but I mean, you become so close to these guys. Like, I mean, at some point, especially when you've been there a couple of years, I mean, you know everybody, and you're chirping everybody on the ice, along with the referees, right? You know, I mean, it doesn't stop. I mean, you become like almost like an OHL family, which is kind of weird to say. Of course, you want to win games, but yeah, I mean, you know. We had some history with these guys, right? So you'd always meet, you know, even before a game, maybe go out and go for a little walk around the corridor and, you know, say, hey, how's it going? Like, you know, have plans to maybe meet up. Or after the game, make sure you go over and to their room and say, hey, how's it going, Harv or Gratz or whoever else, right? Like, so yeah, I mean, you know, you definitely know what's going on for sure.
Were you a talkative guy on the ice?
Yeah, I was okay. I don't think I was like some guys, but I was a little bit, I guess I was a little bit. Wouldn't say a lot.
Easterners are talkers, though. They're just going to go out there and, because everyone loves them. They're just out there, hey, buddy. Hey,
Hey, buddy.
buddy.
How's it going? That's hilarious.
The Easterners also have a bit of a rough side. They like to throw some fists from every now and then. And I mean, glance, you don't need to look too
I
far to
never
find
had
some
that.
fist
Like,
throwers.
I wasn't scared to
No?
fight, but I definitely wasn't a like Gerard was like tough as nails for his size. Like, if you go back to that era when Gerard was playing, like he was tough, man, pound for pound. Like, I love that guy. Like, I used to go to PEI and do his, like, he didn't maybe own the hockey schools, but like, that's when I first met him. When I was a kid, like 10, 11 years old, my parents would go down there and I'd do a hockey school down there. Well, Gerard was always around. So, Gerard, like, we're going back years ago when he was, you know, when I was 12, 13, maybe, like, he'd get me tickets for games in Detroit. So, the families are somehow either second, well, everyone's related in PEI because there's a million Gallants, right? Or Gallants, sorry. So yeah, but he was tough as nails. But there was a lot of other glance that came through that were pretty tough, actually.
Who was it with you at the time with the Rangers that played that role to make sure perhaps that you didn't have to?
So when I first came there, like, you know, the ins and outs were the, you know, the kids, players coming in, players leaving, obviously it's a lot. But the one guy that I remember just being like, the guy I looked up to probably the most my first year was Chris LaPuma. So, like, defenseman, you know, got to play some games in the show, like 5'9", 5'10", like 165 pounds, but no one wanted to fight him. Like, he was just an animal. But I'm trying to think back about the guys we had that were kind of brought in for that role, you know? I'm trying to think who would be, like, my first couple of years. I know we had Dennis Bondy for a bit. Right. And then he ended up going up to North Bay. We had Jason Zohill for a bit. Guys could still play hockey, but they didn't mind the tussle them either.
Brad Barton.
Who's that?
Brad Barton. He had a few
Brad Bart. Yeah, Brad. So
two
Brad.
Prems. Yep.
Yeah. So Bartz was there. I wouldn't say Bartz was a heavyweight. He would fight the odd time, but Bartz is probably the middle of the pack guy. I'm trying to think of someone they brought in. But Barton was, I think he would, might have been a first round draft pick by the Rangers a couple before I was. So I played a couple of years with Brad, not like the whole career, but yeah. So yeah, there was some tough, but it was tough back then. You know, it was more like the NHL that way, I would say. Like, you know, you had to fight for position and, you know, you had to step up, right? You had to. Nowadays, I don't think you have to do that, really.
You mentioned stepping up and you talked about Gratz and Harv, two massive men. As a smaller guy going into the corners against some of the big defensemen in the league at that time, was there a defenseman that you absolutely hated playing against?
I remember playing against Pronger. And he was tough. Like, he was just like he played in the NHL, right? He had like an edge to him, you know, and he found ways to get under your skin, you know, like he would just kind of poke you in the right spot or, you know, get you under the armpit and just give you a shot. Like, you know, refs aren't seeing that, right? Like, he just was a prick to play against that way. And he was six and he had that reach, right? You know, so, I mean, I would have been better off just to, like, dive through his legs probably, to be honest, at some point. But going into the corners with him, like, he was a man already. And he was tough, you know, he's a tough kid and he played that way. And that's, you know, that's propelled him to have a great NHL career.
Just makes me think, Popper and I are just coming off a broadcast in London where we saw the Rangers captain get into a fight. I use the term loosely. He gave away about 8 inches and 40 pounds probably to this guy that was being a little physical along the boards. And the Rangers captain got his glove up in the face. And next thing you know, they were actually going to throw a few punches. He took a whole lot more than he received. But for a guy that was putting up points more often than not, do you remember a fight where you either wanted it or got into it and then thought, oh, bullshit, how did I get this?
Yeah, definitely been in a few fights. You know, I think maybe like, not a lot, like I would say maybe like 4 or 5 in the OHL, like maybe 6. I don't think I ever lost a fight really where I got smoked. Where because like when you're so small, like if I really just put my head down, they can't really hit me. You know, like, they hit top of my head at the back, right? Like, you know, I remember being inside the, I mean, there was one game, might even when Jeff Ward was coaching, because I remember Greg Bignall. You guys remember Bignall?
Big Z, yeah, for sure.
But Big Z, he was helping Wardy. And I remember somehow I ended up on the visitor team inside their bench fighting. Like, I don't know how it happened. Like, it was a kind of a brawl. And I ended up in their bench. And then one of our guys in our team came flying across Jimmy Superfly Snuka over the boards, landing inside their bench to try and help me. And I look over and then Bigsy's got their assistant coach in a headlock. He's just feeding them. Like, and then it was just like, that was okay. Like, nothing ever came from it. You know what I mean? We're like, now it'd be like, you know, we'd all be in handcuffs, right? Like, you know, so, but I remember that. That was a fun time. And it was fun. I didn't mind fighting. I wasn't scared to fight, but I mean, obviously I wasn't very good at it. My arms are like, you know, this long, right? I can just like, I can't reach my wallet, right? I can't hit anybody. They hold me up and I'm not going to make contact, right? There's just no way. So I'm more like a grappler. I would just kind of get in there and hold on tight.
I was just laughing. Could you imagine something like that happening nowadays? Like you talked about it, but even just not even the Superman dive, just a player ending up in the opposition bench, getting in a fight. Like you'd be suspended for 10 games.
Yeah.
Easy.
Oh, easy. Yeah, easy. All over TikTok with some kind of cool music behind it, right? And then it would be just social media blown up, right? And times have really changed, man. Like, you know, I think it's changed for the better, but in a lot of ways, I don't think it has.
We're about the same age. I suspect you, like me, are very glad that it wasn't around when we were doing the things we were doing at that age.
Right.
Right.
1,000%.
I'm much younger than both of you, and I say that about it now, my age. I'm glad it wasn't around when I played.
I love it.
What was Trevor Gallant, pardon me, what was Trevor Gallant like away from the ice as a junior hockey player? Or was it all just hockey?
I didn't go to school much. You know, I just, like I said, I thought like the path was there and I didn't have to worry about anything. Just make sure when I hit the ice for a game, I worked hard in practice. I wouldn't say I was a lazy practice player at all. I mean, yeah, going to the rink, you know, outside the rink, though, like, you know, I just like to hang out with the boys. And, you know, we would, you know, we'd go to the bars the odd time, of course, when we were of age. Of course. But, I think the same things they probably do now, right? Just probably a little more cautious about what they're doing and where they are and who they're talking to and who's taping and videotaping them. We don't have to worry about that. But yeah, I just hung with my buddies and, I had a great billet family, spent time with them and, they were great people. Andrea Chambers and, Stephanie and Chris were her kids. And, I lived there for 2.5, 3 years and hang out there and watch, so in the daytime, like I said, I didn't go to school. I'd go to school and then I'd leave and made sure I got home to watch Days of Our Lives before I went to practice. That was pretty much my day every day.
It's funny how you mentioned the Billet family and of course remember by name. And we hear that so often from guys that come through this league for obvious reasons. They become basically parents, families to you at a really important time in your life. What about your teammates? And you're still in the game today, obviously. How many of the guys that you played with are you in regular contact with still?
I don't know if you guys hear this very often, but it's sad to say not very many. Do I see them at the rink the odd time? Like I run into Mike Torkia once in a while. I run into Tyler Erdo once in a while, guys I played with. It's really odd. Like, there's friendships you have, like your best of friends, and then, life takes you different. You guys are probably the same thing about, maybe your best friends in high school. You don't even talk to them anymore, right? It's very similar to that. It's almost like a similar to a high school experience, right? I guess if you look at it in a big picture and try to break it down. So not too many guys. I mean, I'm trying to think of someone that I would talk to. I would say I probably talked to a few more guys that I played with in Europe. I was in Germany with one team for 4.5 years. And so, we won a championship together. And I almost think that might have something to do with it. I really do. There's something there about that, so there's 3 or 4 guys there that I once in a while talk to, and then my London guys, like my high school buddies or the guys I grew up playing with, I'm almost reconnected with them the last 10 years when I retired, right? Because they're still here. They didn't get to go on and play, where I was able to go play. And so now I see them once in a while. We get together the odd time, maybe go golfing or whatever. So, sad to say, not very many people, even my billets, like once in a while, but it's I have 3 kids and, I'm trying to juggle 3 different hockey jobs basically. And, I think you only have time for so much, right? Sad to say.
No, but it makes perfect sense. And we are hearing more of that. But real quick to follow up, because you mentioned his name and high school. I went to high school with Tyler Ertz, and Ertz is going to be on this podcast next week. So give us something here, T-Bone. Give us something here.
Oh, God. He used to call me Stinky. I don't know why. I was so him and Torch used to call me Stinky. I could never figure out why. So ask him that question for me.
Okay. Why did you call
me Stinky? Even when I see him today, hey, Stinky, what's up? And I don't know why. So I'm pretty sure I didn't stink.
But, I was just about to say, did you stink?
I never heard that from anybody else. Just Ertz. I don't know. I had lots of nicknames, though, throughout my career. So that's one. Everyone has their own nickname for me. But, yeah, he calls me Stinky for some reason.
We just heard T-Bone. Are you a T-Bone kind of guy?
I am a T-Bone. Seinfeld, I am a T-Bone kind of guy. Absolutely. That's my longest standing nickname is T-Bone. That's why I tell my kids to call me on the ice. Yeah. And then Bulldog was the other one. I was Bulldog with Team Canada mostly. And then T-Bone a lot of years after that.
Was the Bulldog because you played like a Bulldog?
I don't know. I think maybe I looked like a Bulldog and I got a body like a Bulldog, short little stubby legs and stubby, stubby arms. Right. Got the statue, so maybe that might be it. And yeah, I think I play like a little bulldog sometimes. Maybe. It's a good question. I'm not really sure.
You mentioned running into Mike Torkia. I thought you were implying that it's easy to run into Mike Torkia.
Hard to miss.
Yeah.
Do you have a good Torch story? He's such a lovable guy. Anyone who knows him comes on this podcast, talks about him immediately. Oh, Torch. I ran into Torch the other day. He's awesome. Great
personality, right? Like, that's the guy right there that I see and he gives me a big hug, right? He'll kiss me on the neck and he's just got that the way about him, right? He's a great guy. Torch was Torch, and he knew his deficiencies. Everyone did. I mean, it wasn't you couldn't hide it, but he still had an exceptional career being, whatever, right? Like he was so amazing. And I think he got tired of people saying, like, get on the bike, right? Like, I mean, the guy tried, could he have tried harder? Maybe. like I said, I could have tried harder, right? But we were in Italy together. So we actually played pro together in Italy. That's where Laura and my wife, Nicole, and then we played together in England as well. So yeah, we played together a couple of times, which is actually pretty cool. So Laura's wife and my wife became pretty close friends. So, you know, I remember playing in Italy and like the coach, I think his name was Bob Mano. He's like, oh, Torch, we want you on the bike every day here at like, whatever, like 7 a.m. or whatever it was. Or it's like, he's like, really? Like, this is me. Like, it ain't going away. Like, if I'm not going to do it to be able to play in Dallas, well, I'm going to do it here to play in Italy. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he just, he tried, he got on the bike and, you know, he tried to, you know, like, but he wasn't in bad shape. Like the guy could play, you know, his conditioning was fine. You know, his flexibility was fine. You know, he played in the NHL. Like, I mean, you know, so yeah, I mean, I don't really have too much of a funny story. Just he's, if you ever talk to him, he's a encyclopedia. He knows a lot. Lots of little facts about stuff that doesn't really matter.
He remembers a lot.
Yeah, absolutely remembers a lot.
Yeah.
We were talking earlier about the game, the way that it was played when you were in it, the fights that were commonplace that would get people arrested today. You've been vocal in the last number of years, though, Trevor, about concussions and the way we diagnose and monitor for them today that obviously we weren't a few decades ago. Are we in a better place with the game because of that?
That's a hard question for me to answer, to be honest, because I think the game is, you know, I don't like the way the game is played now for that reason, if that makes any sense. But then I understand that there's more life than hockey. So if there was a happy medium in there somewhere, I think I would be all over it. I think, you know, the referees, they do the best they can. They're probably scared not to call something. And then something happens to this boy who maybe had took a elbow to the head and, you know, there was no call and something happened. You know what I mean? There's always this kind of like same with social media, right? You're just like always on eggshells. You know, we're almost going too far now crazy, right, with it. You know, do I have issues from concussions? Absolutely. Right. Like I deal with it daily, bright lights or big crowds or like I struggle big time. Is it because of concussions? 100%. You know, I was playing through concussions and never doing anything about it. Right. So, yeah, I wouldn't want anyone to live through that. So, I mean, is there some way to make it, you know, to make it the way it is and change the way we look at making calls? We have to get really dive deep into the scientific part of it. I am happy that they are siding on the air. They're erring the side of caution extra now, which I think is a good start. But like I said, I think it does take away from the game, to be honest, a little bit. Like the never whistle. I coach minor hockey. It's just nonstop, right? How do you get into rhythm? And then you're trying to get your team going. And you know, and one night you're killing, you know, 8-9 penalties in a row. Next night, you know, you don't get, you know what I mean? There's consistency isn't there because of it's so opinionated with like a referee making a call from one angle. Right. And that referee might be a little more, you know, touch that. Oh, you're going to the box. And I wonder if he might be a little bit more open to maybe he played the game. Right. I know doesn't mean you can be a good ref or bad ref. I'm not making that point, but maybe that's why one ref might think something different than the other ref, you know? So there's lots to it. And my son went through it. I think it's a great thing that we are diagnosing them better for sure. But then I worry about what's next, right? Like, what are we going to do next to take away from the game? That's what I worry about a little bit.
When you were playing overseas, my buddy played in Geneva in Switzerland, and he's got plenty of stories about Chris McSorley. But was there any moment overseas where a coach said that he wanted you to do something or something different within the game where you were just like, where am I and what on earth are you wanting me to do?
I never had a crazy coach like that. You know, I did. Chris was over in England as well when I was playing. He was coaching the London team at that point. And so the stories before I got there was like, this guy's a nut bar. I never actually met the guy. And then when he started coaching over in, I think, yeah, he coached over in Switzerland right after that, I think. I never actually met him. So most of my coaches were pretty low key, actually. I don't have any of those stories where a coach kind of was really far. Oh, well, I guess one coach, Dave the Hammer Schultz, coached me in roller hockey. So he was nut bar, like he was nuts. So
yeah, thank
one story. Yeah. So I went down to play roller hockey after my fourth year in the OHL. Went down to Philadelphia and played for the Philadelphia Phantoms. And he was our head coach. He was still a god down there, right? He was still a superstar. Like and he would just go off on the bench. We're like, what is this guy doing? Like looking at each other, like almost like embarrassed, right? Like he starts slamming gates for no reason. Everyone's like, this guy okay? Like, where's the jacket? Like, you know, great man though. Like a wonderful guy, like awesome guy. Just, you know, well, you saw what he did in the 70s, right? Like he just, you know, went to his house, had a great barbecue with like old flyer guy, Rick McLeish was there. Billy Barber was there. A lot of the old flyers from that era were there. Big steak dinner. He had our whole team over there. It was great. Like, but yeah, he was off the wall.
Did he give you a Salisbury steak? And you were like, actually, I'm a T-bone guy. There, Tiger.
That's something like that. Actually, I got in trouble because I grabbed a hot dog first. And he yelled at me. He's like, those are for the damn kids. He gave me
hot dogs and Joe Louis. You're a simple guy, T-Bone.
No, I'm a simple guy. Keep it simple. Give me a Joe Louis and a hot dog, and I'll play for you. But he got mad at me for that. And then he's like, we got steak coming for the adults. I'm like, oh, sorry. Anyway, he yelled at me a few times anyway.
That's fantastic. Yeah. One of the three hockey jobs that you currently have is scouting with the Hamilton Bulldogs. What do you look for in a player these days?
For me, right away, I think what I brought to the table was probably just IQ, you know, be able to think the game differently and move around the ice methodically and always be in the right spot at the right time. There's a reason why pucks follow certain players around, right? Whether it's natural or even thinking about it, they just know where to go. And so I like players like that for me personally. Other guys might look for skating, physicality, you know, do they have quick release, what's their goal scoring ability, stuff like that, right? So the first thing I'm drawn to is someone that thinks the game. I don't look at their skating. I don't really look at their overall stature, like how big they are, what they might get to. First thing I'm drawn to is, oh, that was an intelligent play. And then I go from there. So that's kind of how I would do it mostly.
And breakaway speed, right?
That's second, for sure.
That's second. IQ, then breakaway speed.
Well, everyone now can skate, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, I don't think you can play in the OHL now if you can't keep up, right? Like, so, yeah, I mean, it's the skating ability has gone crazy.
You know what? I will tell you, I agree with that. But there's a kid that the Hamilton Bulldogs just acquired in a trade with the Kitchener Rangers. And I should be embarrassed. I am embarrassed to admit it, but I'll admit it anyway. When he first came as a free agent from St. Catharines to try out with the Rangers, the one camp, I looked at him and thought, well, this kid can hardly, like, he doesn't skate well enough to be in this league, Arbor Jack guy, and look at him now. Like, what a story.
That is a great story. I didn't know him before that. I do know his younger brother, his younger brother is in four, and my youngest son played against him. But, I don't really know his path, to be honest. I just know that he had a really successful last year with Montreal signing, and then like all of a sudden he's a stud, like a league stud where people would love to have that guy back there to quarterback, whatever. And he's got this way about him. You know, I didn't know him. I do watch the Ottawa HL game and the Ottawa Kitchener Ranger game. And he's just like a calmness back there, and he provides some kind of a safety net or something. Plus he can, you know, he can shoot it. He can provide some offense. So he really has a big package for sure. He's a good player. We're really happy to have him. Put it that way. That, you know, more. I think he almost puts us more over the edge than McTavish does.
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever seen a player have that steep of a trajectory, like or steepness of a development. Yeah, he came from. I was with Farzi. I saw him when he came over from St. Catharines. I thought this guy can't skate in this league. Zero chance.
What year was that, guys?
17.
That'd have been. Yeah. And then you see him this year. He was the best skater on the ice every game. The work he's put in, I get all the credit to him. 1,000%.
He worked at it, something he did extra, you know. So, yeah, good for him. But we're happy to have him. Sorry for you guys. You got Nav or Mutter, my buddy. So, Nav, I've worked with Nav for a long time. So, Mutter, we drafted Mutter, right, out of Elgin here. So, I've known Mutter for a long time, and we're happy to get him. And he's a beast, too. Like, his rookie year, he was a fifth-round pick, I believe, by us. Fifth or sixth round pick. And he made our team as a rookie, like as an underager, right? Because he was so mature. He's so mature and ready to play physically. And he wasn't afraid. He was one of the best hitters I've ever seen at minor midget. Like he just would crush guys. And he also had a little bit of offense. So he made our team as a rookie. The coach were like looking around going, who's this guy? Almost like a slap shot with the Hanson brothers go up there for a shift. Literally, it was like that. He'd go up for a shift. And John Gruden was our coach at the time. And he's looking at Steve, like literally looking with eyes, like the eye roll going, who is this kid? Like, you know, it was just hilarious to watch it. Cause I knew him. I knew the kid and it was good. It was a good story. So he's a great kid.
You talked about, you know, not well, going to school, but not staying in school because you thought the path was set out for you. In all the development you're doing with, whether it be with Hamilton or Tag, do you talk to the players about having another option just in case hockey doesn't go out and kind of using your past as an example?
100%, 100%. A lot of parents too. I talk to them. I don't mind telling my story. Like, you know, I think, you know, it's funny, like today I wouldn't get away with that. Right. Like I wouldn't, there's no way I would get away with what I did back then. Right. So they've already got that kind of platform set up. And OHL would not be as strong as is today unless, you know, they didn't go ahead and make sure that they focus on those things, because right now we'd be losing a lot more players to colleges and stuff like that. So, you know, parents are much more comfortable sending their kids to an OHL club now because of the platform that the OHL has put in place and, you know, the rules, you want to call it, or what the teams have put in place to make sure these kids are going to school. So, yeah, like, I mean, I talk about, you know, having, you know, fallback plans or whatever, like, let's face it. I mean, you might, you know, even the really good players might play a little bit of pro, but you're not going to be able to like retire on the money you're making. So, you know, I think education is a wonderful thing. Like if I can go back, you know, knowing, you know, what I know now, because I would have had opportunities to go to school. I did have opportunities to go to school. You know, go back in that time, a time capsule, would I go to the OHL? I don't know. Like, I mean, going to Michigan State would have been pretty cool, you know, and would have been pretty fun and a great experience. So I don't know what I would have done, but, you know, I definitely tell kids that, yeah, listen, like you got to make sure you have a plan. And again, it's hard to tell a 17-year-old, 18-year-old to have a plan, right? They're not ready. But yeah, I tell them my story and make sure they know that it's important to stay in school.
We've reached the point where I know Popper's going to have just one more question. So before we get to his one more, my one more is one you got me thinking about when you were talking about Navrin Mutter's rookie season, which would have been the year the Bulldogs, Hamilton Bulldogs, won the OHL championship. So while you didn't win one as a player, I suspect the feeling is somewhat special, even being part of the organization that pulled that off a few years ago.
It was amazing, man. Like I was there watching the game and our head scout was there, Davey. And we were sitting up top watching the game, like never been so intense. Cause I hate watching, I'd rather play. Obviously you guys probably were the same way. You're like, oh my God. Then they scored. Anyway, long story short, we're like jumping up and down, like hugging each other. And people like, who are these guys? Right. Probably didn't know who we were. So, you know, spending like, you know, a bunch of time on the ice and, you know, Mr. Andlauer, like what a class act, right? Like, you know, I'd been working for them for a couple of years. Dave Gray hired me. And you know, Stevie was there and I know Steve because Stevie played in, you know, played in Niagara Falls and all that. So Steve knew who I was anyway, but yeah, it was a great thing. Like, you know, and you know, I was lucky enough that they were able to give me a ring, which was fantastic. So I'm really proud of that, even though it's for scouting. I mean, I think I brought some good players in and we had players in there that they were able to make trades with. McMichael was one of them that I was a big fan of, and I fought for him to be drafted by us. And we had three or four other guys we're looking at. And so, you know, we don't get Robert Thomas, we might not win that cup. So, yeah, I have a small hand in maybe what happened, you know, or a little bit of I contributed a tiny, tiny bit. But it's a wonderful organization, and Stevie's great, and our staff is unreal. And I love doing it, and I hopefully be able to keep doing it for sure.
My last question is kind of an open-ended one to you, because we've talked for an hour here. We've mentioned a lot of names. We've talked about different stops throughout your career. I'm going to leave it up to you. What story do you want to tell on this podcast about your OHL days or your pro days that we didn't ask you about?
Oh, Jesus.
You got a good one for us? Something funny, maybe?
A story. Let me think here. I think it's something that would be kind of unique and different.
Like if you met someone in a bar and they said, oh, you played in the OHL? What was that like?
You got to remember, we're on a podcast here, right? Like, we're not sitting in a bar and we're not having a pint of beer.
Speak we for will, yourself. Though. We will, though.
Okay. I mean, okay. I don't know how much I'll get in trouble with this, but there used to be a bar called The Network, and the odd time I'd go there for a pregame meal. But it was a dancing ladies club. And they offered $9.99 lasagna. I think it was like $3.99 for a piece of lasagna and a pitcher of beer.
So that's great.
I think maybe that happened. I don't know. Maybe that was a dream. I don't know.
Your pregame meals are certainly something. The chicken wings, lasagna.
Joe Louis on the bus. It's perfect.
My teeth in, guys. I apologize.
Don't. This is off our back. It's a hockey podcast. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. It adds credibility, if anything, T-Bone.
For sure. This has been great. Really, and I love I said it earlier, but the honesty with which you tell your story, I think it's important. And it's so cool to catch up with one of the top 10 scorers in Ontario Hockey League history. That's fantastic. So thanks so much for doing this with us.
Guys, this is amazing. I love talking hockey, and you know, it's brings back lots of memories for myself. So, you know, thanks for having me on. It was a wonderful experience, and I, you know, hope to see you guys again sometime.
If you're ever back at the Odd, make sure to come up and say hello, and we'll make sure to let you know when we're down around London. Maybe you could stop by.
Yeah, I will definitely do that for sure, guys. 100%.
Hi, I'm Emily Roger, and I host a leadership show called The Boiling Point with my co-host, Dave Vail. Together, we sit down with trailblazing entrepreneurs, thought leaders, and movement makers who are driving meaningful change in our world. The show is all about exploring the lives and perspectives of leaders who are making a difference. Join us for insightful conversations that challenge the status quo, spark new ideas, and inspire you to take action. Find us on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or at BoilingPointPodcast.com.
Another Sound Off Media Company podcast.